We're talking with Rick Anderson, who is a writer with the Seattle Weekly and who has done a phenomenal piece on Paul Allen and the football stadium here in Seattle that we are blessed with. Rick, start out and tell us, how is it that you got to write this article in the first place?
I got interested in it by a Seattle businessman who had sort of, in the past 5 years, kind of devoted his life to finding out exactly how the stadium deal went down. Named Armin Yusufian. He's the owner of University Plaza Hotel. And he basically started out like anybody just generally interested in how the tax would affect his business. And the further he delved into it, the more resistance he got as to find out exactly why this happened, why that was done, what agreements were being made. And he ended up on his own becoming a bit of a dumpster diver in that he began to learn how to use the Open Records Act and obtain documents and pretty soon became rather proficient at it. And eventually, last December, I think it was, ended up winning what could be a $500,000 lawsuit against King County. That's how much they may have to pay for stonewalling him for 5 years in his attempts to get all the documents regarding the stadium deal. And he called me, and because of a friend, mutual friend we have, I sat down and read his initial stuff, did a little short story on that, and then he continued on getting more documents, and eventually we could see there was truly a large story here and the backstory on how the stadium was essentially engineered by Paul Allen using public funds and a secret NFL loan and the politicking and the friends in Olympia that all conspired to bring it about. It's not that there wasn't perhaps a need for a stadium. Great, you know, if Paul Allen wants to build it, and there's no reason he shouldn't have. There are NFL owners of certainly lesser money stature, just mere millionaires, who have built their own stadiums and served the public by doing it. Paul Allen got a secret $63 million loan from the NFL, and it was conditioned on him leveraging public funds to pay the rest of the stadium. He ended up paying $130 million. Taxpayers paid $300 million, at least on paper. That's actually a billion-dollar stadium when you add in the interest, paying off the King Dome debt, and a lot of related projects. That's what taxpayers will pay. Paul Allen, with his $63 million loan and sales of seat licenses, got at least $75 million of his $130 million paid by taxpayers and fans. The loan from the NFL is basically a gift. It's a 3.5 interest rate, and it actually is paid back by a cut from the visiting team's gate. And in order to make sure the visiting team didn't lose any money, Allen raised all the tickets $5. And this is the way it comes down from the NFL. They've done with this same kind of deal with up to $130 million for some stadiums across the U.S. They've been doing it very quietly for years. And especially in Paul Allen's case, as far as I know, we are the only Seattle media to have written about his secret loan from the NFL. So all the machinations that go into something like that, totally unnecessary for a man of his wealth, $25 billion, give or take a billion, who could have easily built a stadium, and there wasn't any reason why he shouldn't have. He bought the team for $200 million. It's now worth at least $400 to $500 million in this short stretch, and it'll soon be worth a billion, as all those NFL franchises will. So he's turned this public asset into a way for him not only to make a lot of money, since he essentially designed, built, and operates the stadium, takes all the profit, but it also increases the value of his team. that's why Paul Allen's a billionaire, of course. The man doesn't miss a beat. And if he can avoid spending his money, he'll certainly do it.
There was so many incredible facts that came out in your article, it's hard to choose where to begin. One of the things that shocked me was finding out that the NFL itself is a nonprofit organization.
Yeah, you know, I think I had heard that before, but I just kind of discounted it. But indeed it is, and I think it's they consider themselves an educational nonprofit organization in that they educate football fans, I suppose. I think their annual gross is something like $3.7 billion. I mean, God, I can't remember how many billions that TV contract is, but and this is the money that they use to dole out to owners to make the owners richer and get fans to pay for their stadiums. When they could do it all themselves, it would just cut into their profit.
Yeah, I think you had $18 billion for the figure for the network TV contract.
That's
for
it.
For like 1 year?
And no, I think that's a 3 or 4
okay.
year deal, but astounding.
Maybe we could tackle this from looking at how this all came to be. It was back at some point like 1994 when Ken Behring started to make noises that he wasn't so happy with the arrangement.
Yeah, Behring, essentially he wanted a little bit of what Paul Allen eventually got. He wanted a better place to play or an improved kingdom than about 17, 18, 19 years old, I can't remember at that point. And he was hoping to basically add some seating and some expensive seating, such as club seats and suites, that would bring in more money for him. He was constantly losing money, he claimed anyway, and I think in fact he was. But in part that's because he fielded a crummy team. He didn't spend any money on it, or spent money on the wrong people, the wrong coaches. And he wanted a place that would be renovated. And he was actually would accede to a renovated kingdom that would have had windows in it, windowed walls, and it was a pretty nice looking facility. And he balked at that eventually because the cost and some agreements with the county just wouldn't work out to his advantage. And so he kind of pressured it. He saw what was happening across the street. The Mariners were getting everything they wanted and by threatening to leave town. So he pulled up the trailers in Kirkland and said he was leaving town, going to Southern California. From that point on, it just became kind of a stalemate and a legal standoff between the county and Behring. And Behring was ready, I think, to sell. He was primed to sell, and Moneybags Allen steps in. And, of course, is offering Behring a, let's see, Behring bought the team for like hundreds of million, and Allen offered him $200 million, so why not? And from that point, Paul Allen said, I'll do it if I get a stadium. And there were a lot of pretense about that. They pretended that they formed a task force and that the task force was going to look at everything, all the different possibilities, renovated kingdom, so on, and Allen just was saying no from the beginning, I want a stadium. That's what all these documents show that Armin surfaced out of the county's vaults. And they show how these studies were rigged in the sense that everybody knew what Allen wanted, and that's how the studies played out. They said, well, you could do the kingdom for this much, but it's not going to make enough money for Paul Allen. I mean, essentially, that's what it came down to. Even though, in that year, 1997, Seahawks made a $10 million profit at the kingdom, that's not enough for today's NFL owners. It's not just to merely turn a profit, but to turn a huge profit. And from that point, it was just a way of trying to get Allen the stadium that he wanted.
So the task force you mentioned, you're saying there really wasn't a real feasible task force, or do we know anybody that was on that that's still around?
Sure. Wes Ullman, the former mayor, was one of the co-chairs of it. And I think they all believe they did a real good job and that they looked at all things fairly. But Nonetheless, they followed Alan's script, and he was scripting it almost literally. They were following what was submitted to them as the NFL stadium program. And it was basically a blueprint for Alan's new stadium. And it required 73,000 seats, open air, and a grass field. Those were minimums. And working from that blueprint, I mean, how else was Seattle going to get a Super Bowl, Paul Allen said, as if we were ever going to get one anyway. I mean, even now with the stadium built, NFL's not coming to a northern stadium, an open stadium, in January. And in fact, one of the stadiums they're looking at is the new Dome Stadium in Detroit. That's a possibility. And so with that blueprint, the task force kind of eliminated this, eliminated that, and eventually came to its recommendation of a new stadium. And that was the deal. And then from there it went to Olympia.
So, but there was some point in there where that NFL stadium facility program, that document that they're like making it sound and was getting repeated in the media that this is like the grail of stadium documents. There was someone from, I believe, in the kingdom or involved with the kingdom that sent something out that said, oh, we just found out this isn't really the grail.
One of the documents that Armand found indeed said that. Belatedly, they discovered this wasn't from the NFL. It was Paul Allen's own specifications, and it was sort of a rewrite of the Carolina Stadium, new stadium in the Carolina, for the new NFL team. And essentially, he wanted what they had, and with his modifications added. And, you know, it was right down to sight lines, the clearance above the person sitting in front of you should be 2 3/4 inch eye level and things like that. I mean, it was a pretty specific document. And they all believed it to be the NFL's document, but it was Paul Allen's document, even though he submitted it as the NFL stadium program. Though they belatedly found out, and some knew it was just too late to stop it, the train was on the tracks and it was rolling towards this new stadium. And some people did begin to refer to it as the Football Northwest program, but it made a little difference. Even today, people call it the NFL study.
And a couple of those people that were repeating that, would Gary Locke and Ron Sims be?
Sure. Sims and Locke were both playing their own kind of game to get this passed. Gary Locke had kind of talking points he issued, and a lot of buzzwords, such as the county is the stakeholder in this, we have to get the best deal for the people, and so on. He seemed to indicate that he thought a remodeled, a renovated kingdom was the best thing. Meanwhile, in the background, he was working towards this stadium deal, which his people knew from the beginning Allen had to have. And Ron Sims, for instance, resisted the release of studies, at least one, that was contrary to the new stadium being the best deal. There were several that said the kingdom was a much better deal if we remodeled it. And it could still make money, you know, if Allen would go for it. But, of course, he wouldn't. So then Sims did trot out studies that he himself ordered that were favorable to the stadium that Paul Allen wanted. In fact, after Gary Locke was elected governor and was on his safely on his way to Olympia, then he says first thing he's going to do in Olympia is try to get money for Paul Allen's new stadium. So it was all a big game.
Yeah, it seemed that the motivations on a lot of these different studies was the studies that showed that the King Dome was actually a moneymaker was when they were trying to cover themselves for suits later on, whereas the two studies that were done in 96 by a firm called HOK, those were, in effect, even those seemed to contradict each other. The first one said that the dome was feasible, and then Paul Allen paid for a second one, or paid a big chunk of the money for the second one, and that then did a 180-degree turn.
Yeah, both of those studies seemed to pretty much be tailor-made for whoever was the owner at the time of the Seahawks. HOK 1 said the King Dome could be renovated, and it could be a moneymaker for Ken Behring. And then Behring stepped out, Allen stepped in, and HOK 2, the son of HOK 1, suddenly appeared about 6 months later, contradicting the first study and saying Paul Allen could definitely make money if he had a new stadium, and that was the best way to go. In fact, it would be even cheaper than a renovated King Dome because Paul was going to give $100 million towards its purchase, which actually turns out to be about 10% of the real cost of that stadium, and perhaps only half of that or even less he's actually paid. In fact, his tab may already be paid off, and we're on the hook for another 25, 30 years. Taxpayers are.
And is it true on that second study as well that the firm and the people involved with that study never even set foot in Seattle to see what the situation was?
Yeah, the subcontractor for HOK, Houlihan Lokey, did most of the financial investigation as to what was feasible and how seats would be sold and so on and what kind of money would come pouring into Paul Allen. And they did this without ever even showing up in Seattle. And they said even in their answer to the county that the answers aren't going to be very good and we aren't going to be able to see some of the things and talk with some of the people we need to talk to make this a real good study. An important study like this, you know, the future of a major stadium in Seattle. And even at that, the county accepted it and said, this is it. See, look what these people say. This is the word of these experts, without ever mentioning they didn't come to town. That was another thing Armin turned up in his document search.
Right. I think on that second study that it was a $240,000 cost for it and $150,000 got footed by Allen, is that right?
Yeah, Paul Allen paid for half the study and they laid down the law as to how it would be, who would do it, and what it would say. I mean, essentially, they said, you will find out this, you will find out that. Basically, Bob Whitsitt, Football Northwest chief, said to the task force, after it came back, here it is, you know. Build it or Paul doesn't come.
And the people of King County picked up the other half of that bill, would that be right?
Yes.
In addition to the current costs for all this.
Yeah, the taxpayers paid for a study that was tailor-made for Paul Allen.
Did you get the impression from any of the documents you saw or the people that you talked to that there actually was some resistance in the King County legislature for this?
Yeah, there was a lot of resistance and a lot of people at the mid-levels and people doing their own studies and King Dome people. Most of them were fighting real hard to save that stadium. That was a viable stadium. It had another 20 years of life with remodeling that could have been done, a renovation that could have been done anywhere from $200 million to $400 million, and that would have been the cost. One study said it could have been done for $100 million, $110 million, and Behring had offered to pay $54 million. That was like one of the very first studies, and they passed that one up. Behring would have stayed. He would have paid $50 million. We had had another stadium for basically a whole new stadium with a roof on it. For $110 million compared to $1 billion today. And it's sort of funny when you think of Seattle that now has a roofed stadium for its summer games and an open stadium for its winter games. People like the dome. They like being inside. I've been to a couple games at the new open-air stadium and a lot at Husky Stadium, and come November, you just don't want to be outside watching football around here. I mean, I played football in high school around here. I know what it's like. And on grass, it was great. It was muddy. It was a terrible thing to go through. And that's supposed to be the way that football is played. But I found it played rather well in the King Dome when I was nice and warm having my beer and popcorn and raising the roof with the other fans. I mean, it was a fun place to play. even at that, I'm not begrudging old stadiums the loss of them or anything of that sort. I'm just saying this is what taxpayers should know about how this deal was engineered, what happened to their money, and what Paul Allen got out of it, and where he easily could have built this stadium himself.
And what he continues to get out of it. And what we continue to put into it. So jumping forward to 1997 was when Paul Allen apparently felt that he could go to Olympia and lobby for an election, a special election.
Right. He spent a couple million lobbying, softening up the legislature. They eventually approved a public vote that he would pay for. I mean, talk about buying an election. He literally bought this election. And that was another $6 million. And then he spent another $4 million or so publicizing his stand on state airwaves and newspaper ads and so on. And he called himself a partner. He liked that word. He said, we'll be his partner in this stadium. I mean, he was paying as it was, you know, about a third of it on paper even. That's not exactly a partner, at least in the sense that it's him and us, that should be 50-50. But, you know, his actual contribution was way lower than that. And as for being a partner, well, he designed it, he built it, he operates it. We pay to get in to see it. That's our partner's arrangement.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind being in some partnerships like that, actually. So, sure enough, he spends over $6 million on advertising versus $150,000 on the people who are against it and wins the vote.
Yeah, and even at that, won by about 35,000 votes out of, as I recall, 1.6 million casts. So anything along the lines of the information that Armin has found in the files about the engineering of this deal, what Paul Allen actually truly made off it, may have swayed that public vote. But this was kept secret from the public.
And are you guys still going through those files? I assume there's a lot there.
He insists there's more there, and he's continuing to go through them. The county faces a $500,000 fine as it is. He thinks they're still stonewalling him because there are studies and correspondence that he's learned exist from these other papers he had, but the county won't produce them, saying they can't find them.
Shortly after the vote, then the Public Stadium Authority is formed. What's their role in this? It seems like it's really hazy. They seem kind of like a front company, except they got the word public on them.
I like the word front because it seems that's pretty much what they do, is front for Paul Allen. They insist they're an independent state agency, and they're there to watch the taxpayer dollar and so on. But just call them up, and what you get is, if you're calling about Seahawks football tickets, dial such and such. If you want to know more about club seats, call such and such. If you want team information, call such and such. And then eventually it's, stay on the line, someone from the PSA will answer. And that's usually recording too. They are, in fact, in the same building right there with the Seahawks, first and goal and all that. I mean, it's a cozy little group, and it's not an independent state agency in my mind. Recently, the state attorney general's office said Paul Allen will have to disclose his team's finances as part of the state lease. And that's a real stunner for Paul Allen, an NFL owner, a private franchise owner, may have to disclose publicly how much he spends on his team, how much he pays his players, how much they make, where the money goes. That, according to the Attorney General, is what this lease says and what the people demanded when they passed this legislation. Paul Allen argued to the Public Stadium Authority early on that he didn't have to disclose this. It was just his, basically his front company, called First and Goal, which operates the stadium for Football Northwest, which is the Seahawks. Same officers and all. He says now they could disclose their finances, no problem there, because, you know, basically there's none. you know, that they would just pretty much reflect what the PSA already knows and what's public record. And the PSA went along with this. If it's watchdogging our money, I'm just unconvinced that they're doing anything beneficial for the public. I'm sure the PSA will differ with me. There are people down there working every day. I'm just not sure what they do. You know, basically, it's still Paul Allen calling the shots.
Who decided who was going to be on the PSA? Were they appointed by people at the state level?
They were appointed. They're all appointed by the state, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a board, and they have meetings, and they decide things, such as Paul Allen doesn't have to disclose all the money he makes from his team. And they're resisting this attorney general's ruling. And the attorney general essentially says, you're going to have to do it, or there'll be a lawsuit. And you'll lose. So they're even going to bat for Paul Allen now. They aren't playing as an independent. They certainly seem to be tethered way too closely to the Seahawks.
So it sounds like we need a lot more of a spotlight on them.
Definitely.
And is the rest of the media picking up on this now that you're covering it?
No. And I just don't know why. I mean, it's a pretty big story. There's some funny parts to it, too. The PSA, I think it was, yeah, prior to asking for the Attorney General's opinion, I think the state treasurer had called the PSA and asked why this wasn't being followed, why this disclosure rule. And they said, well, we'll ask our attorney to look at it. And their attorney took a look at it, and it said, the disclosure must be made by the football team and First and Goal, which operates the stadium. And the attorney did a Bill Clinton, what the meaning of is, by saying that and could be considered or. In the context of the sentence. So it means the disclosure could be made by either the football team or First and Goal. And he says, in this case, and means or. And the attorney general says, and means and. Both of them have to disclose.
What would be the public's role in this? It sounds like if the public started putting pressure on these people, that we might, since the media's not,
sure,
that we might get some answers.
Yeah.
Since it is our money that's on the line.
Absolutely.
Here.
This is, you know, millions of dollars of taxpayer money. Lots of money that could have been spent on a much cheaper facility or not spent at all that could be used today, such as about $100 million in sales tax in King County alone that's being diverted from the state general fund that could have gone to education and law enforcement and things like that, is going to help pay this stadium off for Paul Allen. I just don't know what you do. You write emails, you call, you petition the PSA, you urge the Attorney General's, Christine Gregoire, her office, to follow through on this, to resolve it, and force Paul Allen to do what the public has asked him to do. And I think the AG's office is pretty adamant about that and that they indeed will do that. But public reaction certainly would speed that up.
Anything else in this story you see as really critical that we've missed so far?
Maybe this is a kind of a reminder to people that to really, and to the media for that matter, I missed that story. I missed this story at the time. I didn't go look at these documents. None of the local papers did. And it took a single businessman to go and ferret them out even years later. And at least we have the story, belated as it is, and perhaps long past doing anything about it. Armand's hope was, he said, to maybe throw a couple of politicians out of office and get Paul Allen to pay for the whole thing. But he doesn't think that's likely. But it's a reminder to not believe everything you're being told by politicians, number one, by government, especially in these big-ticket cases like this. You know, there's just so much more to look at, to be skeptical, this was a classic case, and unfortunately a tough lesson for this state and the city.
All right. Well, Rick Anderson, thank you for coming in. I know I will be glued to future copies of the Seattle Weekly to find out what's going on with this. So,
great. Thanks. You.